I would just like to chime in here and say that Cry is a terrible person, and I would detonate his boat immediately.
We don't need no masthead, we don't need no bridge, 'cause we just talk and bounce boys like a bunch of crazy ass fools.
Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, and good night to all our fellow Spurs fans. Welcome back to Masthead Free Podcast. I'm your host, JAbe2 on Twitter, Top That Makes Me Cry on Carlos Free Captain. And with me today, we have Bricks.
Hey, everybody.
And Vin.
Hey, everybody. How you doing today?
And today, we are going to start off and just do a quick re-evaluation of the thrilling 3-3 comeback draw against West Brom Albion. Thanks to our Lord and Savior Christian Eriksen for saving Tim Sherwood from another horrible week of this dumpster fire. Bricks, what did you think of the Max match?
I also like the Max, that restaurant in Saved by the Bell, but for the match, I had fun watching it. I think a lot of it had to do with the environment in which I was watching. I did end up watching it on delay, and it was with some of the other local Spurs supporters, and we went to our normal football bar. Unfortunately, when we got there, it was still that Arsenal-Wigan penalty shootout. But at any rate, you know, going down those two goals in the first 6 minutes was comical, and started drinking shortly after that. And going down early in these matches is kind of an MO for us recently, and I don't know whether to laugh or cry because we've seen it happen and then have a horrible result like in a Manchester City or a Liverpool situation, but I was still kind of flying high from the 5-1 over Sunderland. So I was like, it's okay, y'all, we got this 5-1. So I ended up just kind of going with the flow at this part of the season. There's no need to be upset. .gif. And luckily I was with a lot of really good natured Spurs fans and not watching it with a reaction thread or Twitter open, and watching it on delay was actually really great. So I had a great time watching the match. I hope that never happens again, but it was a good come behind for our sake, getting the point.
Did you know the result of the match before you went to go watch the replay?
Absolutely not. I usually just stay offline for everything, so I didn't end up watching it until noon Pacific.
You're a better than woman than me, because I get updates on Twitter from Spurs Official and from ESPN Sports Center app, and I was off working, actually, and I got all these updates, and like after my last match, I saw that we got a 3-3 draw. I was like, well, I guess I do have to actually go home and watch this match. And thanks to NBC Online, I had to wait a little longer than I wanted to watch it. But the match was everything I expected. It was the dumpster fire from the very get-go. And then Harry Kane, Aaron Lennon, and Christian Eriksen decided that they wanted to say, fuck this shit, we got this. Knowing that we came back, it made watching a lot easier. But still, I'm ready to see the back of Adebayor. Kabul or Kirakesh might need to leave. I'm not really sure yet. I haven't decided. Yes.
Go ahead, Brex.
I kind of want to interrupt for a moment to point out an inaccuracy that I never do with Cry. But it wasn't Aaron Lennon. It was Kyle Naughton. And Spurs Official listed it as a Kyle Naughton goal. And I literally...
Long goal.
Timeout. But for a moment there, I was... Yes. Like, holy shit. And then I watched the replay, and then I went on to the Premier League site, and then I went on every other source, and everybody named it an own goal. And I would just like to say that I have started a petition on change.org to stop the suppression of Kyle Naughton in our lives.
Yeah.
And this is just everybody's against him, and it's really fucking unfair.
You should probably show it to Kyle Naughton so he stops suppressing his own career. Might be a sporadic player. I don't know. I'm gonna now. I'm just trolling Bricks, but I give zero shits about that. I would say something about Cry talking about Kirakesh. Kirakesh, man, is a weird player. I feel like I don't really know, because anybody who says they like watch Steaua Bucharest, like, or Bucharesti or whatever the hell where he came from, if they say like they know a lot about this guy other than like some basic things, they don't. But what it seems to me is that he was really used to being the best player on the pitch, probably coming out of the Romanian league. But, you know, he did play in the Champions League too, so this is a little bit, you know, a little bit of a stretch, but I think he was just used to being the best player on the field most of the time, because it seems like he makes really silly, stupid challenges in bad places where it's like, just don't do that. But I think maybe like in the Romanian league, he was used to taking the ball off people just by like wanting to, by like his own natural talent that he could just like, you know, the way like Dembele kind of ghosts past players and the way like Ledley was really good at tackling. I think like Kirakesh still has that like ingrained in his brain that he's a really, really classy tackler. He's a really classy defender and he's just not able to do it in this league.
Well, he has moments where he is, but I just think it's like when he's up against like, I guess, I want to say like higher level competition, but we were against West Brom, so that would make sense.
But, you know, it's still a pretty good level of talent, even if we want to say, like, oh, it's shitty West Brom. Like, you know, Vidra is a player that people have talked about. You know, Sessegnon is not, like, a terrible player by any stretch of the imagination. It's just something I've noticed by seeing him play. He's not the best positionally, but even when he is in position, he seems to be impatient, and he'll make stupid challenges. I'd also like to say that I think we have the answer for if we should be starting Nasser Chadli and Paulinho in the midfield. It's a resounding no.
No. Boo.
It was basically like they set up a freeway system straight to our goal those first 30 minutes, and I was just sitting there going like, I can't see any foreseeable stop to this. I don't know how you guys felt about that, or if you saw anything redeeming. I kept saying to myself during the game, I said, like, I just want to see something happen where I can even comment on it. But they were so, so taken out of the game. There was nothing to even talk about for the longest time.
It made us want Bentaleb back. And if you've been following us for a while, you know how much we like really don't like Bentaleb that much.
Well, and we like him, but we're just tempered. I mean, yes. I like him. I think A1 likes him, but we don't like how he's attached to Timmy.
Yeah, I think it's the narrative of Bentaleb at this point and not the player. You know, we're all happy to see someone from.
Bentaleb would have probably like got like a hat trick in.
Well, it's interesting to see that Chadli and Paulinho lineup. I was very confused by that just because we've discussed this not having a deeper defensive midfielder, and we know Paulinho likes to push forward. So we've discussed this ad nauseum. I'm sure that it's been a source of discussion kind of everywhere, and I just hopefully the locker room as well, and you know, with the coaching staff, that we do miss having that, whether it's Bentaleb or Sandro, if he's healthy, Dembele when he's healthy. Just having somebody that's more of a bruiser back there, because Paulinho doesn't fit that description necessarily in the position that we're looking for.
And you know what, we've gone on long enough, I think we have to actually like talk about it. Danny Rose.
Yikes. He was all the things. He's all the things that we didn't like about Kyle Walker a couple of years ago. Bad positioning, switches off, with less athletic ability, which is a big problem for me when I watch him. But he's also older right now than Kyle Walker was back then.
Yeah.
And I'll say one little thing. If there's one reason to not start Eriksen on the left, it's that we can maybe protect Danny Rose a little bit, because everybody knows Eriksen's not a good defensive player, and that's not really what he's out there for. So when he's cutting in all the time, it's just exposing one of our weakest links, and I'm kind of sick of watching
agree.
That.
Like, the left side has been kind of a cluster all season, because we've been playing either Eriksen or Sigurdsson early in the year out there, neither of which have defensive chops, and Eriksen, I think, a little less so than Sigurdsson, who seemed to be offering a little bit more defense when he's on the left. But it's just, the thing about Rose is I don't want to say I don't see him improving, because you never know the future. But with Kyle Walker, there was always something special there. And I don't have that faith with Rose, and I'm a little bummed.
Maybe we should put Kyle Walker on the left and Naughton on the right.
I support
this. See how that works out. because, I mean, it can't, could it get any worse? I mean, actually, it could. But we say, crazy
we say that all the time. Could it be any worse?
Yeah, and then it does get worse. But, what the fuck am I talking about?
and I was having a discussion the other day, not about that. I mean, who knows if that will work, but that's one of those things that you would talk about. I think it was Occam's razor. I was actually talking with Blazion, your bro, and I think Benoit Sparkar, we were talking about the hypothesis that assumes the least is usually the best one. Well, we know that Kyle Walker is turning into a pretty elite right back, even though he's still derpy. So I think the idea that taking him off the right and put him at left back, it seems like a decent idea because we've seen what's happened this year with Rose, and we've seen what's happened that maybe, you know, Walker's an okay right back. But I just, at this point, it's like, we have a really good right back. Let's just go out and try to find a good left back. But I don't blame you, Cry, for about 3 seconds. I'm like, that could work. Then all of a sudden, I was like, oh, man, I don't know if it'll work. Yeah. It's like it never happened before.
Yeah. I just, you know, the little sibling rivalry I have there, I never want to say anything that my brother says is remotely reasonable, but he may be onto something here.
Yeah, okay. I don't know.
And also, Lissa, now that we've beaten up on one of our younger players, let's also give a round of applause to our future star, Harry Kane. I have to say, the boy is killing the game right now. Maybe it's the competition, but the boy is killing the game right now.
I was just going to say, you guys know this guy that does this other podcast named Skip Jack or Skip Jerk or something, but I think he said
the
it
one
on...
The one with the wheels falling off?
Something like that. I don't even know. They may not even be a real thing anymore. But, you know, he mentioned or was in a conversation with something that I saw that said, you know, we've expected Kane to come good for some time now. We still feel like we're almost disappointed in him, but he's still, what, 20?
Yeah.
It's just that he's been quote unquote ready for first team action for a long time, and we expected greatness right away, but he's been ready for first time action for about 2 seasons now.
I think this last game was more what we should be expecting for him right now. Mm-hmm. He missed a couple chances and he wasn't great, but it was the same as the Sunderland game. In the Sunderland game, we probably feel differently about it because we ended up destroying Sunderland, but he didn't make every play. He actually, you know, he missed a great chance, and he even missed another half chance, like where he came away with the ball and it was a snapshot for maybe about 23, 24 yards, and he didn't hit the target. But what he did is he kept running, he kept making his, he kept doing all the hard work.
Mm-hmm. Especially for that first part of the game, he was really our attack, period.
Which, wasn't much. But then he ended up getting a goal because he doesn't give up. He kind of doesn't feel bad for himself. He just keeps working, which is, I think, something that we can work with. I don't think he's ever going to be a line leader. I don't think he's ever going to be the star of the team, but he's a very, very useful player that you need to score goals, especially in, you know, when you're in a couple competitions. You need players like that who are just good players, and I think he's just a good player. So,
and it's also good. It's a good advertisement for the Spurs Academy. So now, like, all these like future English football players who want to like have a chance to like make it into the England team or just be a Premier League player, they can go to the Spurs Academy and like because they see like. There's actually a route to a first team. Like, it might not be like a Premier League team, but you'll get a chance, and then you'll go off to have another chance for a job. So, Harry Kane.
He's the poster boy for that. I mean, we haven't had anyone, and Tom Carroll was the, you know, anti-poster boy. So,
So we're going to just go and wrap this up. Any lingering thoughts about the West Brom game or Spurs overall?
We should have won. Who cares? Let's move on to next week.
Well, we know whose fault it is why we didn't win, but
not Kyle Naughton's.
No, if Soldado was there, we would have won that game, but we'll not get into that.
Well, actually, based off how we played, we didn't deserve to win. That's kind of a flippant thing for me to say, but, you know, we all know what I meant, so.
Yes. Yeah.
We can just move on.
Score was fair.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to do my clash of cultures real quick, if you guys don't mind. Since we're moving away from Spurs to more of an overall view of the league and where we're at. And my clash of cultures is something I've been noticing both on Twitter, on Facebook, on Google+, and some other places when they talk about Spurs and English Premier League is how people don't want Liverpool to win the Premier League for whatever random reason. And I think what's interesting from an American's perspective is in America, for the most part, if your team is not going to win, is not going to win anything, you're all about parity, and you want to see, like, at least, like, everybody having a legit, like, a quote-unquote legitimate shot and hope. Yeah, I mean, some teams, like in baseball and football, have no chance every year. But for the most part, about 40 to 60%, depending on the year and their management, 40 or 60% of the teams in every league have a fair chance of winning the title. And with American sports, that I've noticed is, even if your team's, like I'm a Carolina Panthers fan for NFL, even though I know Panthers have very little chance of winning the Super Bowl, I'll watch football regardless for fantasy football reasons or just to watch a good game. And it doesn't seem to translate that well over in England, where if your team's not going to win, you're almost like begging for one of the regular teams, like a Manchester United, a Chelsea, and now Man City to win. And I find that odd, because if more teams have a chance to win the title or get top four, it's a better product overall. Why is it because Liverpool has a legitimate shot? Everybody's like coming off these old 40-year-old narratives of why they don't want to see Liverpool win the championship of England. I think it's a little unfair for England, and I think I honestly rather Liverpool win than Man City or Chelsea.
And I think that's the thing that a lot of Americans do like to talk about, is this parity. Like, they want to see new people win the title, especially in something like baseball, where for so many years it was dominated by a few teams, especially the Yankees. You know, so they have this kind of idea where one team dominates everything. And I think this became more and more relevant when the National Football League, American football, went to a salary cap, where they said all teams can only spend so much money, and that if you do that, you know, it'll kind of even everything out. But what I don't like is the idea that that actually makes for a level playing field. And also that's something to do with giving the draft pick to the worst team. Like, they give the best draft pick to the worst team. So that's another way of kind of over time making teams better. They just don't have that over in Europe. And they actually send the worst teams down. Like, they punish them. Where here they kind of reward them, which is funny. Because it's something that I don't want to get in politically, but this idea of kind of like sharing the wealth, everything that, you know, Americans would say is very European, we actually have that in a lot of our sporting, you know, culture. Like in football, there's huge revenue sharing. Like, everybody gets access to that TV contract, and then they can't spend over a certain amount of money. And in baseball, they have revenue sharing, and if you spend a certain amount of money, you get penalized for it. You can spend that money, but you get penalized for it. And I think that was all because of, like, seeing the same people. I think people in England, like, still think about Liverpool, like, as this traditional power, so that's why they don't really think of them, like, you know, maybe like a Spurs, or if Everton, or if Newcastle would make a run for the title. I don't think they see them in the same light. So that was kind of a long talk about it. It is an interesting subject, and I think it's a subject you could talk about for like 40 or 50 minutes, just the differences in the cultures. But I don't think over in England that they think of Liverpool like a kind of a sad story, like a Cinderella story. They still remember all those titles they won and all that stuff. And you have to remember that there's like a lot of teams that don't like Liverpool. Like, Manchester United fans and Liverpool fans absolutely hate each other. So they're not going to be happy for them.
Yeah, they're living in the past a bit, those two clubs with their rivalries. But, you know, two things that kind of came to mind is, first of all, I'm not sure that Cry is actually, that this is a legit issue, because Cry mentioned that there were discussions on Google Plus. And, no one's talking on the Google Plus Cry, but I do want to point out that,
broaden your horizons, ma'am.
I do want to point out that in, we are missing our lovely comment other podcaster A1 today, and
it's hard to call ourselves that. Yeah, I know.
But we're missing him today.
Our token English bloke.
Yeah. Our token English man, and I think that there's maybe a different view of it. And like Vin said, not to get into it too politically. Ultimately, with what your views are politically, as far as, you know, sharing the wealth or your views on how rewards should be dished out. So I don't think it's ever going to be a topic that will necessarily be fair, but I do really hope Liverpool get relegated.
Well, Cry, what do you think about, well, because here's something, Cry, if you think about it this year, we're getting absolutely hammered in the press, right? Because we spent £100 million on all these players, and we're not very good. God. Well, think about a couple of years ago. It was Liverpool that did that, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They Jordan spent all Henderson, this money.
Jordan Henderson, you know, he's good now, but they spent all this money and nothing came from it. You know, so I think it's kind of this idea that we like to hammer on people that spend a lot of money. So what do you think of that?
Well, I won't say nothing came from, because they did win like a couple, like what, they won the FA Cup?
They won
Carling
the Cup.
Carling Cup. Yeah.
It was still the Carling Cup back, yeah.
I would take that.
Yeah, but you don't spend that kind of money. You don't spend that money thinking, I'm going to compete for the League Cup. You know, Spurs didn't spend that money this year saying, I'm going to
have the same glory as Swansea and Wigan.
Well, right. But at the same time, it's like the English legend Brian Clough said, like, well, I'm paraphrasing, but didn't him or maybe it was somebody else said that winning those trophies got his players addicted to the taste of champagne. So, like, it just breathes, like, an idea of winning.
I do agree that – I see where you're coming from that, and I agree with that sentiment, because I am definitely somebody who prefers hardware/hammers over Champions League top four finishes. I'd rather have the trophy, because I do believe that that sentiment is real with players.
Like, right now, like, honest to God, I'd rather be Arsenal right now with the chance of winning an FA Cup, but even though – and not getting the top four, like, that'd be a great position as a Spurs fan, I would love to be in.
Well, I just want to announce that even though A1 is not with us, we are still taking applications for somebody who doesn't love Arsenal to join us on this podcast.
Oh, my God. Well, you're all Arsenal lovers in my estimation.
No, but I just said I would switch places with Arsenal right now. I'm not an Arsenal lover.
No, I know. I know what you mean. I'm just
be
teasing.
Clear.
I think it all comes back to, is Liverpool winning the league really parity? Because like I said, they are a traditional power. I don't really see that as parody, and I don't feel like their fans have ever stopped talking about how glorious of a club they are. And a lot of the reason
they're
just like
American Cowboy fans.
Kind of.
Like, yeah.
They just love the past.
Exactly.
I feel like they've never really given up telling everybody how great they are, and that's fine. They love their club. They should do that. But the way they do it makes me feel like it's never really left to the conversation, and they've never really left. I don't think I've ever put it in my head where, like, yeah, Liverpool's going to be terrible for a long time. I always kind of knew this day was going to, you know, happen again. So, like, well, I've never really, like, let myself down to be like, oh, you know, poor little Liverpool. Like, no, not poor little Liverpool. Like, they're one of the biggest clubs in the world. Like,
yep. Agreed. And I think it's funny that you mentioned the Cowboys, because didn't our dear coach from, what was his name, the Jason Sudeikis character?
Ted Lasso
compared him on his little stint with Spurs when he was learning a little bit about the club, that they are the Dallas Cowboys. But I would say that parity is, it's not, Liverpool's not a prime example of that at all. But they are, it would be a parody for them to win the league of my life.
Mm-hmm. Would Everton getting top four finally after like so many years of being just like Spurs and so close, or be an example of parity?
The thing about Everton is that they have always been super forthright with their situation of like always trying to pay off debt, and it's something that not a lot of other clubs talk about. As readily. I mean, you know, Spurs usually, if you look at all those lists that always come out, Spurs are usually always making profit, more or less, with every single season. But even after spending $100 million, whatever.
Profit, not glory, mate.
But
we still made money.
I don't know that Everton's going to be this whole parody thing, because they're dealing with a lot of backlash where people are saying they're never going to be contenders because they did this with loans. And that is a huge issue for people taking Everton seriously. Now, if they do make Champions League and they, you know, do buy not like a top four club, but more like or the big four club, but more like a Spurs, and, you know, hopefully not as recklessly as a Villa 5 years ago. But if they can spend like that, then maybe this conversation will be different in a few years if they keep qualifying for Europe.
And I guess maybe I'm just going to take a 30-second to explain. Maybe some people, I think all Americans understand that there's a big difference between European football, where it's pretty much just like unfettered capitalism. Like, if you have money, you can afford to spend it on whatever you want. They have a financial fair play, but that's not, I don't think that's totally clear how that's exactly working yet. I know it's changed how Chelsea and some of these big clubs have operated, but I feel like they can hide that money pretty easily. in some of these, you know, naming rights issues and all that kind of stuff. But for people who aren't from America who are listening, and I know there's like three of you, but we want you to understand, like, in the National Football League, there is a straight up salary cap. You cannot spend any more than a particular amount on players. So you can't really load your squad up. I mean, you could draft players well, you could develop players well, but then in a couple of years, if you can't pay them, they're gonna go somewhere else. And you can't just pay everybody as much as you want to. And in baseball, it's a little less, and the word is socialist. It's a little less socialist than that, but it still has variances of that to let the lower teams compete. Like an example would be my team, the Milwaukee Brewers. We get a lot of money every year from the bigger teams, and it helps us compete. It does. But you don't really ever see a team like Arsenal, you know, having to cut a check and it goes to Hull City. Like, that's just something that doesn't happen over there.
I have a quick question for you. When you talk, I do not follow the NFL, and when you're talking about salary cap, is that per player or is that per team what they can spend? Okay,
per team. Yeah, and then in the NBA, the union and management have negotiated where there's a certain amount of money that you can pay a player, an individual player per year, which is why like LeBron James can't make as much money as he deserves.
He can't be fired, is what you're saying.
Well, he can't be fired, but he can also make no more than like $12 million from the Miami Heat in 1 year.
You're saying what he deserves, and I think he deserves to be fired from the NBA.
I'm glad Cry knows that, because I really stopped following the NBA a couple of years ago, but I know that they do have stuff like that too, so it's interesting. But anyway.
Well, now that we've scared off and bored or just completely alienated all the English listeners, let's move on to something a little bit more happier. Since our token Englishman has gone off to go see Harry Kane at the Spurs store today, we're going to do a lame of two halves. Bricks and Vin, which one of you is going to be going first?
It's going to be Bricks going first today, because the last time we went up against each other, I went first and then she went second.
Do we have the fourth official ready with the time?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Before you come onto the field, I'll continue stretching. Today, our discussion on Lame Two Halves is who would you guys rather see at the Spurs official store? As we all know, Eric Lamella was originally slated to go there, but then he disappeared and Harry Kane took his place in the lineup. So we're going to discuss who would you have rather seen, Eric Lamella or Harry Kane. And Bricks is going to be discussing Eric. Well, you know, we'll let her decide, and she is getting ready to come out in 3, 2...
I'd rather see Eric Lamella at the Spurs store for many of the amazing things that would happen. If Lamella is seen in public for Spurs at a Spurs event, then we can assume that hell hath truly frozen over. Along with a glimpse of the hopefully shirtless Lamella, we can also have Andre Villas-Boas back in his 2012-2013 glory alongside Gareth Bale and Nico Kranjčar. We would have never have signed David Bentley. Gomez would gracefully hand over the squad number 1 to Brad while Hugo moves to number 49. Dembele would never be injured. Holtby would be permanently traded to Fulham and his likeness erased from the minds of all ill-opinioned children who see him as a viable midfield option for Spurs. Tim Sherwood would be hired as manager of West Ham and they would go into administration forever. Brendan Rodgers would use Google Glass during the league match, a supreme violation that cost Liverpool the league.
Bah! Sorry, I had to cut you off a little bit there. So,
That was an interesting team talk. I really appreciate Bricks bringing the full squad into taking a step back and looking at the bigger picture and not just a great-looking shirtless Eric Lamella, which we can all appreciate. But since we're running a little short on time, halftime's been cut short, and we have 55th. He is getting ready to come out onto the field in 3, 2, 1...
Lamella dead, babe. We're just going to have to deal with that. But, moving forward, when you have the chance to get a signature from someone with the last name Kane, you do it. Not only is it biblical, it's also applicable to the WWE crowd. But, inevitably, the biggest reason you should go to see Harry Kane is because it reminds us of that lovely little pick-me-up, cocaine. Seriously, where would we be without movies like Scarface, Paid in Full, Blow, and Goodfellas? Imagine a life without Joe Pesci asking, "Am I a clown? Do I amuse you? Like I'm here for your amusement?" Yeah, without Kane, that isn't part of pop culture. So go to, so go support Harry Kane and your local drug dealer. The movie industry is depending on it, and we are depending on it too. And good night.
Oh wow. This was a very exhilarating match. Well, you know what, listeners, you guys should go to the to Carlos Free Captain and post your vote on the message board about this exhilarating match. We have, you know what, honestly, I would love to do cocaine off a shirtless Eric Lamella myself.
Sounds like it might be a draw.
Yeah, actually, probably pay a lot of money to see that. Apparently, like my stutter that I never had came back for this episode of Lame with Two Halves. But now it's here to stay. And I know he's not here right now, but I know he would really like us to mention, because he felt so, so, so wronged during the first Lame with Two Halves that, A1 really did destroy Cry last week in Lame of Two Halves. I think Cry got like 2 votes out of 20. It was an absolute shellacking. And A1 came out on top of that. So sorry, Cry. But he's not here.
We all know the English by their votes.
Hey, you know why that actually voted that way, right? In the spirit of A1, Cry, you're a terrible person. Yeah. And that's why good things can't happen to you, and you can't win anything, and you're getting relegated.
And now I'm going to do my weekly reoccurring role of psychoanalyzing Cry, and so basically you're a terrible person, Cry. But that's I can't really do an A1.
I like how you did his accent, too.
Barely. <Cry.
laughs> You're a terrible person, Cry.
Terrible person.
Yeah, I can't do that type of accent. So that's all I got, but anyway. So
all British people do sound like Harry Potter.
Actually, I'm starting to be able to tell them apart. I can tell the North accents. I could always tell the Scouser accent. I could always tell that apart, because I was like, what the hell is that?
It's like Jamie Carragher, just mumbling.
Ooh, when he's talking like that. I could start to tell the Brummie. I could start to understand that a little bit, too, which is kind of like how Jon Snow talks on Game of Thrones and like those people's. So, anyway.
Moving away from Game of Thrones. No, I fucking hate that.
Chill. Everybody just relax. No. Speaking of Game of Thrones, though, I do remember that there was a Game of Thrones question in the mailbag. So, do we have any other questions in the mailbag this week?
I will be going through all of the non-Game of Thrones questions from the mailbag, because it is a absolute shit show and people should ask more questions about Gossip Girl. But
The Wire.
Come on, season 2 for the win. First question we have from Bub 11 is, I'm going to read it verbatim here. We now know we're getting relegated to a division in the middle of nowhere. Which division would you want it to be?
I'm going to say that we want to go to the Finnish third division, and we can take Bub with us, because we know that Finland has the best school system in the world, so that we could get those best teachers there. So Bub can go see Spurs matches in the Finnish third division, and then he can go to the best schools in the world and learn to spell. Sorry, Bub. Love you. It would have been a great question, but I had to troll your ass.
I have two choices. Either we go to the Scottish division so we can actually like win something, or we go to MLS so people can actually like appreciate a great team on the field, instead of like how the Spurs fans in England, who always booing the team off at halftime, Tottenham Hotspurs can come to Washington DC and we can appreciate them here in America.
So are we just saying that top level football here is like third level football everywhere else?
I say mid-table second. Second division.
Yeah, I can't really refute that, rebut that. Anyway, I should go to Finnish schools too. The next question we have is from Tiny Bubbles, and it just says rec. And I say thank you, sir. Thanks for your recs.
That's just what he wrote?
That she just wrote rec. And I'm like, all right.
Actually, I think I did remember seeing that, yeah.
Best question I think we've ever had. But this is a close second, you know, from somebody that I'm hoping maybe might join us in another capacity. The question is from Wilman, and it says, what is love?
What is love? Love is watching your club do ridiculous things week in, week out, sometimes even preventing themselves from scoring. Like I think of that match a couple years ago against Stevenage in the FA Cup, where we actually were blocking our own goals. We actually kept our own goals out. Love is when you watch a team consistently hurt itself, yet you come back every week. It's kind of like watching a drug addict, in a way that's really not an analogy, but I'm going to go with this horrible analogy. You know, they just hurt themselves over and over and over again, and you just like, you just keep hugging them. You say, it's okay. I'm going to love you no matter what. You just watch Spurs hurt themselves in so many ways over and over.
You enable the shit out of them.
And I just keep going back to hug them. I don't yell at them anymore. Once in a while I go, fuck! And then I go, oh, what did I expect? So love is watching something hurt itself over and over again, but still coming back for hugs.
I think love is believing that Eric Lamella and Hugo Gomez, Horacio Gomez, are still alive and contributing to Spurs in a positive way behind the scenes, even though we have no proof of life.
Horacio Gomez?
Horacio Hugo Gomez.
Yeah, the famous British naval captain.
He should definitely be our new number one.
Yeah.
Who do you see, this is from OutZen, who do you see in the race for top four next season? There seems to be a new Super 7 in the PL with Manchester City, Manchester United, Chelsea, Liverpool, Everton, Arsenal, and Tottenham. So, question mark.
I go first. I think Newcastle next year is somehow going to fucking, it's going to be their year where they finally get their shit together and actually become a competent team. We can't forget about Southampton, because somehow they're always there.
And I wonder about their finances, though.
Always.
Well, after they sell Luke Shaw for $40 million to Chelsea this summer.
Oh.
Well, then we could buy Azpilicueta.
Ugh.
David.
Die.
Was that it? Cry. Just two people in the top four?
Sorry.
To the other seven that they were mentioned, even though I don't think Man United is going to make it with
to the skies. Oh, okay, I got you. I thought you were, like, calling out the top four.
No, got
okay,
you. Southampton to win the league and the
bubble. I was like, this is or even, like, crazy
Leeds
for
United
try.
United to come back and take this league by storm.
Yeah, I don't think Southampton and Newcastle are going to make that jump. I think it's still going to be Sky 7. I'd be very surprised if Everton replicate what they do unless they actually buy some of these players. But I don't see Barcelona with any reason to actually completely sell De La Feu. And I don't know what the whole Lukaku situation is going to be, but he's going to be maybe too expensive for them. I also see an opportunity if we get a really good coach in that we could kind of have some of this talent come together and that we could sell some of our players. And instead of buying a ton of players, we can buy maybe a couple players that we actually need. I know everybody knows that we probably need a better left back, as the fullbacks are very important, especially if we're going to have wingers that have the freedom to move in. With a lot of people we're linked to, they're not going to ask these wingers or these wide players to play very rigid systems where they just sit, you know, on the wing and touch, you know, hug the touchline. So we're going to need some a good left back. But, you know, I don't know. I think Spurs could, you know, same as every year, we could definitely challenge, but I don't see anybody really going against the money of Man City and Chelsea at this point. Those two are up there for sure. So Arsenal's, you know, probably going to be right there as well. So what do you think, Bricks?
Just kind of chiming in on the Everton issue is I don't think De La Feu is worth buying necessarily. He's young, and I think he's a huge gamble for Everton if they were going to buy him. I'm not sure that Barcelona would be able to sell him. That's the other issue with whatever's going on at Barcelona right now. So I don't think that De La Feu's absence or them not being able to buy him would make a huge difference for them next year. I also don't think he's worth buying. If they were to buy one person, I'd say it may want to be Lukaku. But they have plenty of options on the wing when Oviedo is back and, with McGeady as well. And Naismith can play there in a pinch. So I think Lukaku would be their only target. I don't think it's worth Barry either, just age wise.
I mean, unfortunately, you know, for parity reasons, it would be nice to see a team like Newcastle. It was fun a couple of years ago. Not really fun for us because we were trying to fend them off, but I think it was fun for everybody to see Newcastle make a little bit of a run. I think it is good.
So much fun, yeah.
I think it is good for the league to see Everton making a run and pushing these teams. I think people liked it in 2009, 2010 when we made a run. It's nice to see these kind of things that replicate themselves every year broken up a little bit. But if you notice, it's always for fourth place. it's never really for the top spot. You know, even when we were, everyone was like, oh, they're going to challenge for the title. It's just, it's hard to go up against that, those kind of deep squads year in, year out. So,
but, you know, we're also at the year where Everton may finish above us. So whether that is the cue of our downfall or the rise of Everton's or neither, it could absolutely be neither. Because, I mean, remember when Newcastle finished fifth, for example.
Right. And
it'll just be fun to see.
Yeah.
We do have a couple. Oh, I'm sorry, Cry. Did you have something on that?
No, I was just agreeing with you.
Most people do. So the next question is from Prometheus, and the question is, match Adele's Rolling in the Deep to a current player and sing it. I don't sing.
I'm not the singing type.
Well, you guys are all in luck. I saw this question, and I did start preparing something. However, Rolling in the Deep, I don't think I could pull that off, and we're going to probably see that I can't pull any of this off anyway. So I chose another Adele song. The song that I chose to actually sing is called Turning Tables. So it's to that melody. I'm not going to play it in the background like the way A1 did last week, where he actually had like the background music, because I think that would distract me more than actually help me. And trust me, this is going to be crazy enough. And you also have to remember that when I do this, I'm not going to be able to come anywhere near to having a good voice. So you have to really, you know, fight through the shit singing to get to the words that I'm doing here. So my
version. Sing the same damn song, Whitney.
Oh, God damn it. So anyway, here's my song. It's called Missing Eric instead of Turning Tables. And it's dedicated, you know, to Eric Lamella. Will I see you anymore? All my expectations on the floor. God only knows what we bought you for. I just want to see you walk through the door. I could deal with your injured status, but if you're dead, I'll just weep. So I won't start you when I play with Spurs on FIFA. I know that you're really just in Argentina. I can't give you what you had at Roma. It's time we can't deny that Eric's missing. Ooh, Eric's missing. Next time I'll be braver. I'll be Eric's savior when he tries to leave. Next time I'll be braver. I'll be Eric's savior, tying bells on both his feet. And then that's pretty much my song right there. And
holy shit, man.
That was amazing.
Wow.
So yeah,
you know,
Eric Savior.
Cry and I actually had to mute ourselves, and I'm really sad the audience couldn't see Cry's seizure he was having. He was so excited about the song.
Yeah,
I just love Eric Lamella.
Yeah, so that's my song. We're missing Eric, and I mean, I could have wrote more verses, but I felt like hearing me try to hit Adele.
No, bad enough. You can't get the people too much unless they pay for it.
Yeah, I guess so.
Just a tester. You've seen The Wire.
Yeah, that's true. I was very proud of my line, I could deal with your injured status, but if you're dead, I'll just weep.
Yeah, so. top stuff, terrific song.
Yeah, that was
top lad. Get this man a deal.
I'm not proud of very much in my life, but that I was proud of, so anyway.
One more question from the mailbag here.
Oh, wait, can I just, how pissed do you think Inverted's going to be that I sang again?
I think he's going to be just weeping out of joy. Like, how can you be pissed about that song?
Inverted is more than welcome to come on the show, just like any other of our listeners are more than welcome to come on the show if they meet the right requirements, and that is by being on Google+.
We should make all the new people sing.
Hey, you guys, I have a question. You guys ever watch the Craig Ferguson show?
I don't, but I've seen it.
It's absolutely horrible, but I, in my mind, since Inverted never seems to join us for these things, he is that skeleton robot sidekick of ours. Everybody's like, it's not actually a real person, but it's so low budget that they can't afford an actual sidekick, so they have a robot skeleton. That's Inverted. Poor Inverted.
We love you, Inverted.
I'm going to go on to our final question in the mailbag. This is from... What a name. Lennon's Eyebrow. It says, the Joker puts you in two boats. the Joker, I'm going to assume, is Batman. Is that Batman, right? Okay.
That's Batman.
Cry is on one boat, and the rest of you are on the other. They're both wired with explosives, and you each have a detonator for the other boat. How long before you blow up Cry's boat?
Which I said, I wouldn't blow up Cry's boat, man, because, you know, that's my telepathic brother, so we would just be talking back and forth to each other, and we would, you know, and I think we've both seen The Dark Knight, so you know that, you know, in the end, nobody, wait, I can't give away a spoiler, so.
Unlike that other podcast whose wheels are falling off, we actually like each other and support each other in our endeavors, and we wouldn't try to kill each other.
Yeah. I only talk shit about people I like. Well, that's not true. But I talk shit about people I like. So I make fun of Cry because I like him. I make fun of Bricks because I like her. I make fun of A1 because, I make fun of A1 because I like him. I'm just going to make him very insecure that I paused there, probably.
I would just like to chime in here and say that Cry is a terrible person. And I would detonate his boat immediately.
I don't know.
Well, he would also get mad at you for A1 will also get mad at you for spoiling a movie that's been out for like 10 years now.
God, that movie sucks. No one's gonna sit through it. It's like 6 hours. You know what, Christopher Nolan? If you want people to watch your damn movies, make them under 2 hours. Mm-hmm. So the moral of the story is: don't watch Christopher Nolan movies, and I won't blow up your boat.
Now, if Lennon's eyebrow or somebody else was on a boat and we were on one boat, it wouldn't take us very long to blow it up.
I would have blown that shit up while we were secretly wiring it. I would have put like a special glitch in the system. So as you're being handed your detonator, it actually, we would be able to blow up their boat, but they would be able to blow theirs up. No. So it would show a true judge of their character when they blew themselves up, proving that they wanted to blow us up.
You guys, you'd be blowing me up too because I'd be swimming to his boat to get cigarettes. I'd be like, I can't take this stress, I need to smoke. And then, so, you know, you'd see me crawl up and you'd actually be blowing me up too. So
why would we blow you up? You're going to be on the Master of Free podcast, and that other podcast is on the other
boat. I know, but I'm talking, I'd be jonesing so bad that I'd, you know, jump out of the ship, and I'd be swimming over to his ship to get the smokes that I know.
Well, you have something a little bit stronger than tobacco on our boat.
I guarantee you, this is not a drug-free boat that we're on. It is a shirtless Eric Lamella with lines of cocaine and $100 bills type of boat.
Okay, by the way, what kind of cigarettes do you think he smokes?
Who Eric Lamella?
Well, either or, really. I mean, this is all good. This is all conversation gold. I think that Eric Lamella smokes Virginia Slims.
What?
I think he smokes American Spirits. Do they have those over there?
Well, Lucky for everybody that doesn't know what an American Spirit is, American Spirit is a hippie cigarette that doesn't have any preservatives. And, well, it just doesn't have any preservatives. Like, basically, if you smoke, like, a Marlboro, it's jacked to the teeth with, like, formaldehyde and all kinds of other things.
No. He's Lucky Strikes all day with the filter off.
Dude, you don't even know. Those were, like, the first cigarettes. Well, it's not true. The first cigarette I ever had was a Newport. But my uncle used to smoke Lucky Strike, no filter.
That is the blackest thing you've ever said.
Well,
hey,
it's true.
Hey, are you calling him white? Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, I mean... This is the racially ambiguous, except for Cry, podcast. But my uncle used to smoke them. He has a barber shop. And when I was a little kid, I remember they used to smoke those in the barber shop. So then when I got older and I would go hang out in my uncle's barber shop, he'd be like, hey, you want to smoke? And I was like, yes, of course I do. And I'd be like choking down this Lucky Strike. I'm like, Jesus Christ. Like, how did anybody ever, because they used to give those out as rations during the war. And I was like, Jesus, how did anybody ever do anything after this?
I don't know how you guys, I have tried to smoke a cigarette and I took one puff and I was like, why do people do this to themselves? It's probably a month old though.
One of these days I'm going to smoke my hookah while we're recording this show.
So that makes more sense. This just went into weird territory. But that's the rest of the mailbag. I think the answer Lennon's eyebrow was looking for is he wanted us to blow each other up and to try and end this podcast. But we will continue.
Yeah. We're giving people what they want.
Yeah, and that's an alternative to somebody trying to flick their lighter for 45 minutes and talk
about
Tom Carroll.
We're giving people what they want or what we imagine they want. So
shirtless
all the same thing, because we are the people, and the people are us, because we is us.
Aw, shit. All
right. So, Fulham.
I don't know.
Without Lewis Hopi.
Yeah, without Lewis Hopi.
Assist maker.
Which, so basically, you know, most of Spurs fans won't be watching because they love Lewis Holtby more than they actually love the damn club.
Yeah, I wish I could say anything here that would be like groundbreaking. I don't know. It's the same old shit. Are we going to put out a terrible midfield that has, not terrible, not that they're individually terrible, but they're put in positions where they can't succeed? Are we going to put out a midfield that doesn't know what they're doing, that has no tactical plan? Are we going to put out wingers who can't, you know, cover for our pretty bad left back and our mediocre right back, who is a backup, by the way? I mean, I don't think anybody should expect him to be a superstar. He's a backup, Kyle Naughton. But, you know, for people, a lot of people know this already, but I know that some people might not know it. This is Hugo Roriega time. Roriega seems like every year he's playing for a team that's in the relegation battle, and he scores important goals. He played on all those Wigan sides who somehow, you know, staved off relegation for all those years until last year. He always scored goals, and I think there's a famous thing of a couple of years ago where they had this, you know, crazy stretch run, and he was being held up in front of the fans because he scored an important goal. Well, he scored a couple of important goals the last couple of weeks as Fulham tried to drag themselves out of the relegation zone. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we know that Scott Parker's on the team, and we know that, like, And we know that, like, Taron Bent's on the team and Lewis Holtby's on loan, so Holtby can't play against us. There's all these kind of little storylines going on, but Fulham's not that great. They have a couple decent players, but it's basically, hey, they're going to try to get the ball to Roriega, and if we don't do anything major to screw up, we should win this game. For some reason, De Jaga always looks pretty good against us, too, but I don't think he even played last week, but he should probably play against us because he always looks good against us.
Well, he's had some screamers this year, too.
Yeah.
Screamers, is a bad thing or a good thing?
Good thing. Some really amazing goals that I've seen from him. But I think their top scorer might still be Steve Sidwell, if that tells you anything about their club this year.
Yeah, Steve Sidwell.
When's the last time Steve Sidwell has actually played a game for them?
He played.
He had the assist this weekend. Last weekend.
I thought it was Holtby who had the assist.
Nope, he's on my fantasy side.
No, Holtby was the week before, and then this week it was Sidwell.
I love Lewis Holtby so much that I have Steve Sidwell and not Lewis Holtby on my fantasy team.
Well, don't worry. I think Scott Parker to Clint Dempsey to Taron Bent is going to score the winning goal this weekend.
You realize that Clint Dempsey is not there.
Clint Dempsey is there in spirit.
That's pretty much all that matters for Fulham. But actually, I'm kind of interested to see if they're going to save themselves from relegation. I mean, Sunderland is in 20th, but Sunderland does have a game or two in hand.
Don't worry.
I think they play tomorrow.
Norwich is going down. Norwich has four of the top six teams left to play.
Do you remember when we were pining for Van Wolfswinkel? Maybe just for his name. And look, I mean, I did not expect that. I thought he was one of our top targets, or anybody's top target for the Premier League this last transfer summer. And I did not expect this from him. I did not expect this from Norwich.
I was going to say,
I didn't expect this from Jose Altidore last week.
Oh, fuck's sake. For anybody that's wondering, we did make a transition from talking about Fulham, where we're just kind of sitting here going, yeah, Johnny Huizinga's defense and Britta.
Hey, will fuck you up.
Yeah, because the Dutch are known for doing that. Except for Nigel De Jong, who for some reason can just get away with some nasty shit on the football pitch. But
Huizinga is a derp liability.
Yeah, he's a derp liability, and Hengelen has not really been that great this year. He's been injured, and when he's come back, he's had some other injuries. So I would equate him to kind of having a Kabul-like year, where we know he's a pretty good player, but he's not really at the heights of his talent level and how we've seen him play. Because I do have respect for Hengelen, Breda Hengelen, their central defender, but
I was going to say, it's fair to say that they're all at the height of their age, because Fulham has about 15 people in the starting 11, that's right, 15, who are 40, and then like two people who are 12. And that's how you set up a starting or a 18-man squad on Fulham. You find a bunch of people and retirees and like two kids. I mean, they sold Kareem Fry at the beginning of this. I thought he was going to be their a little star in the league. I actually expected him to stay in the league and do well for them. So, I don't know. Fulham,
Bricks'
what did you do?
Was brought to you by Chris Hansen and your affinity for 12-year-olds.
And the only other thing, they do have another Moussa Dembele coming through their system, right?
Like, they do. Yeah. He is, I think he's a striker.
Though. No,
he actually, he got a Premier League start two weekends ago. perhaps. I have a little bit of an affinity for Fulham because I want them to be saved from relegation, but not by anything Lewis Holtby does.
Okay. Well,
why do you hate Lewis Holtby so much?
Because it upsets all of our listeners who probably turned this podcast off about 5 minutes ago.
Oh, just pure trolling. No, wasn't it originally because he took away time from Gilfie?
No, I actually really do like Lewis Holtby. I just, he seems adorable and like somebody you want to like go TP houses with and shit. But like, I don't think that he has, I don't think he's just a match for Spurs. I think that we have every solution that we currently have at the club is better than Lewis Holtby. Not as an individual player, but as in how they're going to fit with our squad.
Okay.
No, things can change. We have had a crazy season. We've had manager changes, everything else. I don't know what it is about him, but I really would like to see him do well somewhere else, like a Swansea or an Everton or somewhere. I just don't think we're the right fit for him as a club.
That's totally fair. Okay. Can I ask like a little quick question before we wrap it all up? Because obviously,
no, he's not good looking.
No, that's not even it. It's actually something that we didn't say that we were going to talk about, and I don't. You know, it's kind of like one of those things that we could probably talk about a lot, but it's something interesting that I think, because I think we're kind of done talking about Fulham. Like, we know they're players. We know we're better than they are. We should beat them, but
we have tactics, Tim, as a manager.
Yeah. So what I would like to say is I remember a long time ago I said something about, and I think it's pretty obvious when Eriksen plays that he's, like, one of our best players. So I said, man, we should just build around him. We should just be building around him. Doesn't everybody see this? We should be building around him. And like, I remember somebody at the time was like, well, you don't build around one player. You build around the team. And I was like, what fucking planet are you from, dude?
That's a little abstract.
I can't even remember. But they were just like, you build around a club ethos and this and that, not one player. And I said, nah, when you have, like, pure class, you just say, yup, everybody who plays well with you, let's get all of those people. I just wanted to ask what you guys thought about it, because like Brick said, he didn't fit. Lewis Holtby doesn't really fit. Like, would you guys be cool with building the team around Christian Eriksen and just saying, everybody that can make this guy flourish, let's put him in positions to do that?
Where are we going to get our next, like, we need money for the stadium and we have to sell another player for $125 million.
No, I just mean
Madrid,
like,
Madrid or Barcelona are going to want somebody who's good, let's...
No, I don't mean like buying players. I mean like tailoring the system.
No, we gotta get Christian Eriksen worth $125 million. So whatever it takes to make him
worth
valuable,
that.
We gotta do what we gotta do. We did that for Bale. We did that for Modric.
We did that for
Carrick and Dimitar Berbatov. Let's keep doing that. It's the Spurs way.
And that was actually my point, is that we did do that for Bale. So what do you think, Brooks?
I'm laughing at Dimitar Berbatov.
Dimitar?
I said Dimitar.
Oh, there we go. I think it's kind of a moot point, and here's why. You never know what's going to happen with an injury or a player. Everybody, we had this one-man narrative around Bale, and he left, and this year was a rebuilding year, and that's one of the reasons I didn't want to see AVB leave, because I didn't expect us to replicate last year's quote-unquote success, or I was hoping that we would match it at best. So building around a team around one player is tricky because of how the club wants to manage their selling and buying policy or injuries or anything else. But then to say you build a team around a team is the most abstract thing I've ever heard. So it also does depend on the timeline too. When you're working on building a club, I think of that as being like a comprehensive policy or like strategy of, you know, 3 to 5 years minimum. And players just don't have that lifespan, and shit happens within the league. So it's, I don't even know that this can be a discussion that's based on how someone runs a club. I think you have to do what works for now and what works for the short-term goal, because that's really what everything's focused on now in the league. You know, managers don't last long. It's not this bring somebody in, let them have a bad season or two to really build something stellar. It just doesn't work like that anymore.
Okay, fair enough. It was just something that I thought about the other day, because I think it's pretty clear how good Christian Eriksen is, and it's
absolutely
not—it's not a question anymore. So I just thought about it, and I thought, hey, this is a good spot since we're done with Fulham that we can maybe talk about it.
I'd rather talk about Christian Eriksen than Fulham. I think
enough.
We all would.
But that brings us towards the end of the podcast, and this week we wanted to do a little segment that we haven't done in some time, and it's a little homage to, or homage, however you want to say it, to our buddy that isn't here. How do you say that word, Brooks?
Homage.
homage. It's an homage to our buddy that isn't here. We're going to do Wenger didn't see the incident. So, Cry, why didn't Wenger see the incident this week?
Well, this week, the reason Wenger did not see the incident is he was too busy following U.S. Airways Twitter in their response to a troll named Alex who was complaining about her spring break being ruined. And U.S. Airways' response was to twit pit a picture of a model 747 in a woman's sexual organ and telling Alex that that's where she can provide her feedback for customer relations.
Oh, poor Alex Winger. She just wanted to go on spring break.
Oh, Jesus.
It's understandable why he didn't see it then. Yeah. I'd be looking at that, too.
So. Yeah, that would be the pits. Well, that concludes another edition of Masthead Free Podcast. Please follow us on Twitter, download us on iTunes, give us 5-star reviews, and we will read your reviews on air, 5 stars only. For Bricks, 55th Finn, and our brother in England who is studying for some kind of exam, maybe a retinal, A1. I am Todd, makes me cry, and this is Masthead Free Podcast, and come on, you Spurs.